10. Escape. The very few people who knew that I was talking to McAfee have asked me the same question. Do you think he killed that guy down in Belize? I never answered, of course, but I gave it plenty of thought. I went into our conversations wanting to believe that he didn't. Indeed, I knew that if he did, no matter how interesting any book was, it would always have the shadow of an innocent man's murder hanging over it. So honestly, I was prepared for the worst-case scenario. And that scenario was one where we talked about the events surrounding Gregory Fong's death on November the 21st, 2012, and afterward, I didn't believe a single word McAfee said. Had that been the case, I would have finished our talks, pressed save on the Word document of transcriptions, and walked away. I promised I would have. No book is worth the negativity that an attachment to violent murder brings. But I didn't feel like that when McAfee explained the events to me. And having worked with many people from all walks of life, some of them extremely narcissistic and unpredictable, I like to think I know when people are telling me the truth. Despite the allegations made in Gringo, The Dangerous Life of John McAfee, at no point did I ever feel that McAfee was involved in Gregory Fong's death. He may well have done many suspect things in Belize. I always felt uncomfortable with the concept of him keeping the company of many girls at once. Regardless of what I already knew about his complex relationships with women, I could never quite get my head around the idea of him having what was essentially a harem. I also knew that he had started taking a variety of drugs again in Belize. But in that instance, his reasons for having done so perfectly tied in with justifications he explained previously regarding only reaching for drugs out of absolute necessity. In Belize, under siege and suspicious of everyone and everything, few could argue that that necessity was certainly there. But having heard him tell me his life story in detail up until 2012, I genuinely felt that these few years in Belize were merely an extension of the life the man had always lived. Not just that, he had lived it unapologetically and without any obvious sense of guilt. The difference was that in Belize, a place where due process and common law seemingly went out the window at every turn, the stakes were very much higher. That environment simply accentuated the McAfee tendency for being wary. It seemed he had every reason to be. Me. What was the plan once you got to Belize City? Surely you were taking a huge risk by being essentially in plain sight. John McAfee. Sam and I had arranged to hide out in the upstairs attic of a Chinese warehouse in downtown Belize City, really not far at all from the main police station on Queen Street. It was a pleasant room, very well equipped and air-conditioned, and I knew that nobody would ever find us there because the Chinese owners, well-versed in the art of secrecy as they weren't going to say shit to anybody. As safe houses go, it was one of the better ones, and it's here that I was active on my blog, every second of every day. All this time I was hatching an escape plan, and while I was, my photo was fucking everywhere. This exposure would soon play to my advantage because, in parallel with working the blog to keep the story alive and breathing, I was teaching Sam the finer nuances of disguise. Me, did you both wear disguises? Were they credible? John McAfee, even basic techniques like going to the bathroom and stuffing rolled up toilet paper in your cheeks. It sounds mundane, but I promise you that when you walk out, even your own mother wouldn't recognize you. These are the things you have to do when you're in a pinch, and I knew we'd need every edge we could get in the days ahead. As the primary person of interest to the police, I required a more radical makeover, and I quickly figured that the first thing I'd be expected to do after going on the run was to shave off my distinctive goatee beard. Everybody would have shaved it off. No, the beard stays, I thought. Instead, I manicured it precisely and made it jet black. Then I dyed my hair the same colour, like those old men in their 80s you sometimes see who are trying to look 20. I got a cane and started practicing how to walk with it and a hunched back. Before long, I had a brand new persona, a tragic excuse for an old, vain man it admittedly was, but crucially, nobody in his or her right mind was ever going to look at me and say, "That's John McAfee." Again, it worked. Belize City is a bustling, vibrant, colourful place at the best of times, and it got to the point where I could go out with Sam to the grocery store unnoticed. We had to because the Chinese barely acknowledged our existence, far less fed us. To the casual observer, I was just this old man with a black goatee and matching lustrous hair, walking around grocery shopping with his granddaughter holding his arm to help him along. Me, are you saying that nobody looked at you twice? John McAfee. Nobody paid any fucking attention, even though we were in such close proximity to the police station and in plain sight, as you say. Meanwhile, I knew that the police effort was not letting up. They were still diligently hunting us, and they'd never stop. This went on for 3 weeks while I plotted my escape. It soon became obvious to me that if I were going to get out of the country alive, I'd need outside help. There I was, one white older guy with Samantha, a young Spanish girl. Together, it was going to be hard to get across any border. And I wasn't prepared for us to separate and to let her go it alone because there was always the possibility that she'd be caught and tortured for information about my whereabouts. That would have been unthinkable. I figured that as long as Samantha and I were together, there would be no reason to harm her. But I needed assistance, preferably in the guise of white people. So I told Amy, who, despite having a mother who was as black as the night sky, could pass as a white woman, to co-opt her white boyfriend Keith. I knew he'd do anything she told him to, but that still gave us just three white people and Sam, not exactly enough to fill a tourist bus that could be driven around Belize unnoticed. We had to be a bigger group that would look more authentic and draw less attention. Me? Some would argue that a bigger group might attract more attention. John McAfee? I didn't think so. I started thinking about possibilities. My first thought was the media. Ever since the early days of McAfee Associates, I'd always known how to, depending on how you viewed it, work or work with the press. Furthermore, I knew given these extreme circumstances that I'd be getting offers from people all over the world wanting to either interview me and or physically travel with me during my escape. I was in no doubt as to how big a scoop my situation would be for any publication. Me? Surely there's a conflict here. On one hand, you want not to be seen, but on the other, you want publicity. Explain. John McAfee? The first person I chose was a gentleman by the name of Adam Thompson, who worked for the Financial Times in London. Send me a current photograph of yourself, I told him during our initial dialogue. When it arrived, well, damn me if he didn't just look like this typical English distinguished gentleman. I thought to myself, I can pull this shit off. Given careful planning, the group dynamics could add up. Sam would be part of this guy's paid entourage for female companionship. I would be his Central American advisor, a role that is almost always performed out by a white guy, incidentally. Amy and Keith would be his grandchildren. We'd all appear to be down there in Belize having fun. Me and this journalist bought into all of this? John McAfee? In exchange for an exclusive story? Absolutely. He came. When he arrived, he was blindfolded, driven around Belize City, dropped off at a random bus station, was told, "Follow me," by a passing stranger before being delivered to a street corner, whereupon I showed up alone and hobbled close by, this old man whispering again, "Follow me, sir." I then led him up to the attic. "I can't do this," he said, within literally a few minutes. "What is it that you can't do, sir?" I asked him. "I just can't go with you," he began, scanning the room wide-eyed at the bizarre posse in his midst. I didn't understand the gravity of what I was getting into. Hearing this, Sam jumped up. She was pissed. "I'm 21, I'm a girl, and I have bigger balls than you do. Put that in your article." He almost did. I doubt that the piece Adam Thompson wrote on his return from Belize was what he had in mind when he went down there, but it was certainly reflective of his disquiet about the air of chaos, and rightly so. Yes, we were acting out roles, me in disguise, but it wasn't any sort of game we were playing. We were fleeing for our lives from a ruthless pursuant in a country where justice was hard to come by. On reflection, I can't exactly blame the guy for getting freaked out and bailing. The Financial Times of London isn't exactly renowned for being the most overly adventurous crowd. Nevertheless, I received a bunch of other offers over the following few days. But as much as I knew how valuable coverage would be, I resisted these advances. Instead, I trusted my intuition. I could sense beyond doubt that these two were people who would either freak out, panic, or just do something that would get us caught, simply because they didn't have the necessary experience. Me, were lots of publications, outlets really contacting you? It was suggested that you were exaggerating this fact to spin your story. John McAfee. Many of them, via my blog, which by this time was getting a lot of attention in the press. Then along came Vice magazine in the form of an email from editor-in-chief Rocco Castoro. He said that he wanted to come down to Belize with world-renowned war photographer Robert King, who, despite seeming to be somewhat crazy in the head, had been around the block. Looking into him more while I deliberated for a few hours, I found that he'd been on the front line several times in a few wars and been shot in the ass for his troubles. God damn, does he have balls, I thought. We agreed that they'd come down. I'd get two more bodies to aid my escape. They'd get a story. That was the deal, and it seemed like a fair trade. In advance, I had tasked a cab driver I knew well, one of the only people whom I still believed was not being paid by the Belizean government, I might add, to rent a van with Turismo on the side. He then came and picked Sam and me up first. As he did so, I was acutely aware that we were switching modes of living. We'd been in hiding, but movement changed that status. Now we were on the run. After collecting Amy and Keith, the Vice guys were then met at the Belize City Airport, and the six of us then headed south on the coastal highway, running the police gauntlet as we did. However, I had everything planned to the finest detail, even down to weather reports. I knew that there would be roadblocks on every road in Belize, manned by police officers looking for me, possibly holding my photograph. I also knew that, especially in third world countries, policemen who are paid $5 per day do not stand in the pouring rain checking IDs. No, they vacate to their automobiles. Who wouldn't? They'd sit huddled in these vehicles, and of course, they might look at a passing van and think, I suppose that dude might have looked somewhat like the guy in the photograph. But I was counting on them not actually venturing out and getting soaked to find out for sure. And that's how this ruse all played out. Just a few minutes after we met Rocco and Robert, there was, as per my calculations, a deluge that would ultimately last until the following day. We cruised past roadblock after checkpoint, occasionally manoeuvring from one side of the van to the other to make it appear more populated than it was. I even have photographs taken out of the van window of police in their dark green jeeps looking at us as we passed, with my photograph pinned to the dashboard. Yet they seemingly saw no reason whatsoever to stop us. Me, I'm struggling to understand how you plan to get out of the country. Surely you'd have to cross a border somewhere. John McAfee. Our initial destination was the small coastal town of Dangriga, a little over 80 miles away, and the place where I'd arranged a fishing boat to be waiting. I knew the place well. I'd visited often under more relaxed circumstances to go fishing around the reef or to explore the many Mayan ruins in the surrounding jungle. I'd checked us in for a night in a hotel that I'd frequented on several occasions prior. It was this gorgeous plantation-style retreat at the top of a mountain overlooking the ocean. Under normal circumstances, the hotel staff would have known me, but in my disguise they didn't recognize me at all, which was both helpful and necessary given my fugitive status. It was only the next morning, as we were leaving, that I let the facade slip somewhat. I started standing up straight, looking at them, smiling and speaking in a normal voice. "Mr. McAfee, is that you?" the desk clerk whispered through narrowed, quizzical eyes. "Indeed," I nodded sheepishly. "I sincerely apologize." What else could I say? I can't deny that I hated pulling a trick on people who'd previously been kind and friendly. Nevertheless, you do what you've got to do. I just couldn't run the risk of anyone turning me in. Desperate measures force similarly desperate acts, my friend. Me, was this the point where you said goodbye to the girls? John McAfee. Yes, and it was all a bit strange and unexpectedly emotional for me. We gathered at the boat that awaited us. Everything was on time and going precisely to plan. It was the moment for long embraces and painful goodbyes, and at this point things became far more emotionally complicated for me than I ever bargained for. Amy and I had talked in the past about her coming with Sam and me and leaving her boyfriend Keith in Belize. I knew I'd never be able to come back, and because of that, if she stayed, I knew that I'd never, ever get her out. For her to come was the only chance that we had of staying in each other's lives. However, as I stood beside the boat facing Sam and Amy, these two young women for whom I had such deep affection, I saw a look cross their faces at the same time. It was the same expression, and it said, "We're at war, bitch." These young girls both knew that they were now running for their lives, and it was as if there was this simultaneous dawning that only one of them would be getting on board that fishing boat. The other would be remaining in Belize, albeit in Amy's case, I always knew she'd be safe because she'd be living with her white boyfriend Keith in San Pedro. Nobody would touch them there. Let me be clear, I would not have left her if there had been any risk of future danger. Regardless, for me, it was still a hopeless situation, a dire dilemma of the heart. One thing that was for certain was that there was no way in hell I could take them both on the run. An older man with one young girl in tow was just about acceptable. Two young women, on the other hand, jealous and at each other's throats, would have alerted far more suspicion and would have put all of our lives in danger. I couldn't take that risk. I had to make a choice, and in doing so, I have to admit to being motivated only by self-preservation. Me? Let's forget that I do not for a second understand your attachment to these girls, given one tried to kill you several times and the other colluded with gangs to potentially have you killed or extorted. But how did you make a choice? John McAfee? For some time, I'd known that Samantha's uncle was the former Attorney General of Guatemala, Telesforo Guerra. Despite no longer holding that position, he still wielded considerable power in a country whose relationship with neighboring Belize wasn't exactly warm and fuzzy. Indeed, they'd been haggling over a worthless, barely populated slice of jungle on their shared border for 100 years or so. I knew, therefore, that once I was out of Belize, away from the fucked-up jurisdiction of Prime Minister Dean Barrow, with his paid-off gangs and personal armies, that he wouldn't be able to touch me easily. He certainly wasn't in a position to be able to just call up and say, "Hey, Prez, Dean Barrow here. Would you mind apprehending that fucker McAfee who has just walked into your kingdom?" I knew that was not going to happen. At the very least, he'd need to go through standard diplomatic channels with the powers that be in Guatemala. And even then, I'm sure that they had way bigger fish to fry diplomatically than me. So due to her personal connections with a once powerful dude who I knew might be extremely helpful to us down line in Guatemala, I chose Samantha over Amy, and I did not enjoy doing so. I just couldn't save them both. As I broke the news at the boat, I'll never forget the expression on Amy's face. It said just one word. Why? I think she felt I'd been giving her false hope, along which, truthfully, I had been. It was a terrible moment. Her face still haunts me now. You're in a very sensitive period of my life now, my friend. This was one of the strangest moments of all of my many hours with John McAfee. As he described leaving Belize and how he arrived at the decision to leave one of the girls behind, he sobbed uncontrollably. I've listened to the recording hundreds of times since, and the 7 minutes and 39 seconds of listening to the man crying uncontrollably are no easier to listen to now than they were in March of 2020. Part of me had no idea what to say, so I said nothing. Another bigger part of me didn't really understand what it was that was upsetting him so much. After all, the way I saw it, there were several other events in his long life, the death of his father, lack of relationship with his kids, and lost love, etc., that arguably warranted a similar, if not more, emotional outburst. I couldn't understand it then, and I still can't now. But these emotions he was showing were in no way put on for dramatic effect. These were real. This was a man who really did feel the painful loss of a Belizean girl who had tried to kill him 3 times, deeply. To me, few things exemplified the absolute mystery of the man I'd been talking to for months, more than those 7 or so minutes. They will forever puzzle me, as he also will. After a 10-minute break, we continued. John McAfee. We set off. Destination, Livingston, Guatemala. As the coast came into closer view, I started considering an imminent hurdle that I'd always known we'd have to negotiate. Because we'd left Belize illegally, we'd be arriving at the Guatemalan border without a passport exit stamp. That's a big no-no anywhere, especially in Central America. However, I'd already planned the solution in advance. In all Latin American countries, eating and meals are viewed as sacred things. Maybe this view is rooted in a history of deprivation and the lack of sufficient food, or perhaps there's some deeper religious reason. Either way, all I knew was that you just don't fuck with people's meals. We arrived in Livingston, Guatemala's only port on the Caribbean side, and I had planned it specifically so that we would arrive as close to 1 p.m. as possible. Me? What possible difference did that make? John McAfee? There were 2 reasons for this. Firstly, I knew that the siesta, the most sacred and beloved of Spanish inventions, did not apply to government employees. Beyond that, I knew that we'd be arriving in a deserted ghost town. Restaurants closed, stores, shutters down. Secondly, I also felt sure that whoever was on duty would likely be the lowest on the totem pole and also the most unhappy about having to nap in the back of the immigration office on some tiny cot, only then to be disturbed by a bunch of fucking Americans. When we landed, I was beyond apologetic. "Sir," I began with hands in a subservient prayer position, "we haven't eaten in many hours because we've been at sea. Please could you grant us the freedom to go to the restaurant up the hill, grab a bite to eat, and come back after the siesta?" "Of course," he said, clearly respectful, as I knew he would be, of how important food is to any human. Meanwhile, I also knew very well that he didn't want to process us anyway. All he wanted to do was go back, lie down, and hope nobody else arrived for the next 2 or 3 hours. We walked to the restaurant, ordered, ate, stood up, walked down the hill to the dock, and climbed aboard the other boat I'd arranged to pick us up, a hollowed-out canoe with an outboard engine on the back, essentially to take us all the way up the Rio Dulce to the town of Fronteras. We never went back to the immigration office. Me. What was the specific appeal of Fronteras? Did you know people there? John McAfee.
I'd heard about Fronteras from friends who were into sailing.
Sailing up the Rio Dulce is the most profound of all things, people said, and holy shit, were they right. At the end of the river, you enter the vast expanse of Lake Isabel and see the distant lights of the small town of Fronteras at the end, winking like a beacon. Boat is the only way to get there, except for the very roughest of back roads. Perhaps for this reason, Fronteras is probably the safest place on the planet. And given our predicament, it needed to be. Did I know people there? Good God, no. In fact, the town was filled with nothing but people who were evading the law. Fraud, assassinating a prime minister, whatever it was, it seemed like they were all in Fronteras, Guatemala. People had no last names. It was considered rude to even ask anyone's last name. Police were non-existent. As soon as we arrived in Fronteras, I knew we were going to be fine there. For the time being, we were out of immediate danger, I thought. Me. I remember reading this story at the time. It was all over the news. Is this where you had your cover blown? John McAfee, yes, and what a fucking shit show it was. And we would have been, except, having got us booked into a hotel for what I figured might need to be a couple of months in hiding, we went down to the swimming pool, whereupon Rocco, in his capacity as the senior editor of Vice magazine, showed his complete lack of experience. I want a picture of John and me at the pool here, he suddenly said. We're going to publish it on our website right now. Cool, I said, but make sure you scrub the location data. Yes, yes, of course, he replied, without looking up from what he was doing. But he was in such a rush, so desperate for the scoop after days of being sworn to silence as part of our deal until we reached the relative safety of Guatemala, that he obviously lost his fucking mind. The picture was indeed published on the front page of Vice's website with the accompanying caption, "We are with John McAfee right now, suckers." I kid you not, within 30 seconds of that image going online, the telephone started ringing in the hotel. The reason? Every motherfucker on the internet now knew exactly where we were. The location data was still on there. There were Google Earth images with a large X where we were standing not 30 seconds prior. Me, why did he do this? It put you all at risk, surely. John McAfee, I have no idea. As I said, as experienced as Robert King was, and I'm still in contact with him today, maybe Rocco was more interested in the attention the story would get than keeping everyone safe. I didn't hold it against him at the time. There was no point. Now things had changed, though. Unwittingly, I'd just dumped some serious pressure on the government of Guatemala. Up until that point, everything was vague. I was just some schmuck who had escaped, and maybe I'd made it into Guatemala, or maybe nobody really knew where the fuck I'd gone. Now, though, if anyone so much as thought about googling the word Guatemala, it jumped out of the screen. It was near the very top of most searched words. News sites all over the world were all over it. Guatemala, McAfee, McAfee and Guatemala. That shit was everywhere. Me, in tangible terms, what did you think might happen? John McAfee. Well, good God, I had experienced enough of Central American mentality to know that in these circumstances, the Guatemalan government wasn't just going to shrug and say, "He's here, so what?" No, now that the world at large knew what was unfolding on their watch, I knew they'd be wary of potential embarrassment. The authorities were going to do anything they could to pick me up immediately. They weren't going to let me sit in Fronteras and fucking sunbathe. So having been on the run, and before I could even sit my tired ass down on the bed I was about to sleep on, I found myself on the run again, only this time not from some third-world hick prime minister. No, Guatemala had one of the most disciplined, well-trained and vicious armies in all of Central America. Because of a careless error by a rookie magazine journalist, the stakes had gotten very much higher. Me. Now that you've been discovered, what was the game plan? John McAfee. We had to leave again. We'd just gone from the frying pan into the fire. We had a different bunch of bastards after me. By the time a taxi arrived and we were ready to leave, everybody at the front desk of the hotel knew exactly who I was. Everybody was looking at us in absolute horror because the stories that were circulating about my character were pretty intense, to say the least. People were afraid. By this point, I'd called Samantha's uncle to introduce myself.
I'd never met him before. "Hi, I'm John McAfee," I said. "Oh, I know who you are, Mr. McAfee," he replied. "I would like representation," I told him. "Absolutely, I'm at your service," he said. "What can I do for you?" "You can get me back to America," I told him. "No problem, that'll be $100,000. Me, did you have $100,000, and if so, how? John McAfee, I have always had emergency money throughout my life that I'd never had cause to dip into. This money was safe for a situation where my world was about to come to an end. If anything qualified as that kind of an emergency, this was it. I made a call back to the US, I don't need to tell you to whom, got the man $100,000, whereupon he assured me he'd get me to America. The only problem I now had was getting to him by running a gauntlet through Guatemalan police and soldiers who were sure to be on the lookout for me. The odds were not in my favor. Me? Was part of you resigned to being collected at this point? John McAfee, I had thought about it. If I was going to be collected, I wanted to be collected by Interpol and not by the Guatemalan authorities. That much I knew. Me? What difference did it make? Collected is collected, isn't it? John McAfee, if Interpol collected me, I'd have to go through all the standard Geneva Convention-type stuff where I'd have to be treated fairly. It wouldn't be great, but at least I'd be perfectly safe. If the Guatemalans had collected me, all bets were off. Who the fuck knows what horrors I would have had to endure? That was my biggest fear. To allay that fear, I had to get to Guatemala City, and let's just say that there was no Interpol in fucking Fronteras. We arranged to meet Telesforo Guerra, who in turn had sent his men to meet us at a handover point somewhere between Guatemala City and Fronteras, on back roads. In the car were me, Samantha, and these two vice guys. But the problem I now had was that our cab driver soon figured out who we were. Me, how? John McAfee, I said to him, "Sir, do you have a telephone?" He handed me his phone. "Ah, a beautiful telephone it is," I said, "and I will give you $500 in cash for it right here and now." At that point, he figured it out. I gave him the cash, took the phone, broke it in half, and threw it into the jungle as we drove along the road. This was in a country where the average daily wage was $5. Me? How did this poor cab driver respond to that? John McAfee? He turned dark, and by dark I mean he got fucking scared. He stopped joking and started looking very fearful and panicked. I'd just given him the equivalent of a year's wages. I'm sure he suspected that nothing good could come from such a start to our relationship. I could see those thoughts going through his head. Meanwhile, I was the only person in that car that spoke even a smidgen of Spanish. However, I did not have enough Spanish to calm this motherfucker down. Me? How did you appease this poor guy? John McAfee? I tried another tactic, the kind of tactic that my programming friend Dennis Yell from back in my McAfee days would not have understood. "Señor, what kind of music do you have?" I said, pointing to the stereo tape deck on his dashboard. "I have many," he replied. "What's your favorite?" I asked him. And so he pulled out a cassette tape, and by this time this guy was quite cheery again, despite having a bunch of white men in his cab, one of whom was wanted for murder and had just snapped his phone and thrown it out of a moving car in exchange for a year's wages in cash, and a Spanish-looking chick that looked as if she might do anything at any time. The tape went into the machine, and on came Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones. As soon as he did that, I thought, well, fuck, it's all going to be cool. We're all going to have fun here, and immediately started singing along with the tape. Music was the only means of communication I had. Robert King, who was sitting in the front seat at the time, video recorded all of this. It's out there online somewhere if you care to look. Me, I assume you made it to the safety of Guatemala City without incident. John McAfee, more or less. We got to the halfway point where everybody was happy apart from Rocco Castoro, who, as it turned out, had sold me a bill of goods about his level of experience when I was vetting people to come down to help me escape just by being present. He told me he'd been in every war in the Middle East, etc., etc., but he sure as hell didn't act as if he had. He acted like some terrified geek who was ready to piss his pants. And I later found out from Robert King, who really is legitimate, that Rocco went to cover situations in the Middle East, but only after it was over. He had claimed that was war coverage, but really it wasn't. Me, do you think he had exaggerated his experiences to convince you to get him on board? John McAfee, He certainly lied about his credentials, and none of that was of help to us, especially when, as we ate lunch at a restaurant at the pickup point while waiting to be met, he kept nervously looking out the door. Before I could say something, Robert said, "Rocco, if you do that one more time, I swear I'll kill you myself." Robert knew that we weren't safe until we got to Guatemala City. Robert knew we were in fucking no man's land with one of the most brutal paramilitary forces on Earth looking for us. Eventually the car, Telesforo's big black Mercedes limousine, showed up and we were taken to Guatemala City. "Me, at this point, did you think the danger was over?" John McAfee. "I knew that now that we were in his company, it didn't matter if the police had a goddamn roadblock down the road. I had made a deal. He'd accepted my money. If that bastard wasn't able to help me, there was no hope for anything. To that end, I knew we would be safe, even if there were 1,000 soldiers with AK-47s pointed at us, because Telesforo Guerrero was one of the most feared men in Central America. So while everyone around me was probably still panicking, I stopped worrying the moment I got into that limousine. I didn't want to be in this play any more than anyone else, but whether I liked it or not, I was in it. We got to Guatemala City, where we were likely to be surrounded by the many eyes of Interpol. Nobody was going to allow the Guatemalan federales to gun us down in the street." Me: "What happened when you got there?" John McAfee: "I didn't know what steps I'd have to go through when I got to Guatemala City. When I got there, I was taken into police custody by Interpol and put in jail just before I was about to do a press conference where I planned to reveal some unpleasant truths about the corrupt nature of the Belizean government. Simultaneously, that first evening, the Belizean Prime Minister, Dean Barrow, went on TV and said something to the effect of, 'Mr. McAfee has been arrested in Guatemala. We have requested his immediate extradition. We will arrest him tomorrow and he will be returned to us.' That was his plan, but he didn't know I had Telesforo Guerra in my back pocket. That first night, Telesforo brought this judge in who had the power to stay any movement of me from my current location until noon the following day. Meanwhile, they were to prepare an appeal to the courts, an appeal that the courts would have to accept, whereby Guatemala could ship me nowhere without my permission until my case was heard. But everything had to be done by noon, otherwise Belize could simply collect me at the border." Me: "Why were you put in jail at all? Is this one of the times you faked illness?" John McAfee: "It was declared to the world that John McAfee was in jail in Guatemala for the horrific crime of entering the country without a passport stamp. In reality, I hadn't done anything anywhere that was worthy of anything more than a $50 fine. And yes, it's one of the two times I've done it, faked illness in my life, and nobody will fall for it ever again, most likely. Simply put, it got to the point where I had to buy time until the court returned the appeal papers. That was going to be 2 hours at most," Telesforo explained. Before he left, he turned to me and said, "Do I need to give you further instructions?" "Nope, I'm good," I replied. Me: "So you faked a heart attack?" John McAfee: "Keep in mind that this policy works best when the eyes of the world are upon you, and the reason for that is that, in public view, the rules and common practices of medicine must be adhered to, all of which take time. This was my ace in the hole. At 11:45, 15 minutes before I technically could be collected, I was standing with the guards. Then I fell flat on my face and started performing convulsions, etc. Now, it didn't matter what they thought. They may well have thought I was faking, but it didn't matter. They had to go through the procedures because all of the world was watching. So I knew they had to take me to the fucking hospital for appropriate examinations and tests. There were federales at the hospital, but the doctors wouldn't let them in. Why? Television cameras." Me: "Where were the vice people at this point?" John McAfee: "They weren't with me, but at some point Rocco called me. I'd got hold of a mobile phone somehow. On that call, he didn't ask how I was bearing up in jail. No, he ranted and raved because the shirt I was wearing when I was arrested was a shirt of his that I had borrowed. That is the God's honest truth, and Robert King will confirm that. Rocco completely unwound on this whole trip. He was not the man he said that he was. He just was not equipped to be following my ass around. He was naive. He was always doing stupid things, and here he was, turning paranoid about a shirt and also his missing laptop. 'That's my favourite shirt,' he said. 'I'm sorry,' I said, 'but right now, it's my only shirt.'" Me: "Can I assume the doctors knew what was going on?" John McAfee: "They weren't stupid. They had to have known. There were TV cameras everywhere and federales outside. There are still pictures out there of me lying on my back with my head braced. When I'd been there for almost 3 hours to make absolutely sure, I sat up and said, "You know, I really do feel much better. I do not know what happened. I apologize. I am no longer a young man." I was taken back to prison, by which point things started to become more comfortable, as I'd found a way to get cash and was already bribing guards and wisecracking with the other prisoners. I wasn't just in a prison, I was in a Central American hole-in-the-ground prison. But within a few days, I had a mattress, internet connection, a television, two telephones, strawberries, McDonald's, and women. I was a minor celebrity in a Guatemalan prison. What a dubious claim to fame that was. Me, what sense did you have as to what people in the US felt about this whole sequence of events? Did you care about your image? John McAfee. I guess it was just what the press was saying, which was completely negative, not that I particularly cared. I was still an American, and to that extent, I knew what could and could not happen to me once I was returned there. Unlike Belize or Guatemala, there was no possibility of me being murdered in the street just because I was a bad man. So I didn't care. I was much more concerned with what people in Guatemala were thinking. Me, and what were they thinking? John McAfee, well, during the 3 weeks for which I was detained prior to being returned to the US, all kinds of diplomats passed through to talk to me. Why? Because I had no problem whatsoever telling them whatever they wanted to know about their neighbor Belize, with whom they were essentially engaged in a silent war over a meaningless strip of deserted land. I was a most valuable source of inside information to these people. That was one of the reasons they kept me so long. They all sat and listened to my story intently. Of course, they all wanted names, which of course I had, and places, which I also had. I helped them with all that shit because at that point, Belize had ceased to be my home. I owed it nothing. All the information I gave in no way harmed the Belizean people, but it damn sure harmed those in power, which is one of the reasons why I'm still on the run from these Belizean motherfuckers even now. Me? What happened to Sam? John McAfee? She was a loyal lady. She stayed by my side in Guatemala City the whole time I was detained, right up until the day that I was forcibly removed from detention and deported to the US. Of all the experiences that I've ever had, including love affairs, flying through canyons and all these things, nothing has awed me more than the trip from the Guatemalan detention center to the airport in Guatemala City, where my plane was waiting to take me back. Me, what specifically made you feel in awe? John McAfee, I was in a military convoy. The entire boulevard, many, many miles of it, was totally devoid of other automobiles. On every street corner and rooftop were paramilitary forces with fully automatic weapons. There were spotters, scopes. Why? Because by the time they had let me out, the president of Guatemala himself sent his aides with a video camera so that I could tell him directly my story, including, if I wished, anything juicy that I hadn't by that point told anyone else. By this point, Belize had to have figured out that I had spilled everything to their only real enemy, and because of that, there was every chance that Belize had mounted some kind of effort to stop me from returning to America alive. Me. So the rooftop presence was to protect you? John McAfee. Yes. I heard later that Telesforo Guerra had said, "It is our highest possible priority that Mr. McAfee be delivered to that plane alive and intact. It was the safest I've ever felt." When I saw that level of security in a poor country, I knew what it meant for them to mount an effort like that. They probably didn't even do it for their president. They sure as hell didn't want to be known for being the country where John McAfee got whacked. They just wanted me the fuck out of the country. However, I get bored easily in cars. My mind started wandering. Typical of me, I remember thinking, I wonder what I could do now and get away with that I could never get away with elsewhere. And the answer was pretty much anything. I could have slapped the colonel sitting in front of me across the face, if I'd felt like it. I could have punched the other guy on the back of the head and nobody would have touched me. I could have pissed on the soldier sitting next to me with no fear of reprisal or consequences. Other than the physical limitations of the car environment, I felt like there was nothing I couldn't do. For a few minutes, I felt omnipotent and simultaneously a little childlike. When I was a kid, I dreamt of situations like that.